Hey, I'm professionals. Tedisco here with two exciting announcements. Number one, we have EduPodLooza coming up. That's going to be so exciting. We have 6 hours of podcasting, a 6-hour podcast marathon, which we are going to break up into nice little sample size chunks for you to enjoy over the summer. And number two, I am stepping away from unprofessional development, but do not fear. We have another amazing unprofessional here for you. Joining Mealy is going to be Shane from the Ed Podcast. So, to give you a little sample of Shane, who you might have heard, he has co-hosted with us before. Here is a little sample of the Ed Podcast, straight from Shane. Enjoy, and follow us in the next few weeks to hear more EduPodLooza.
This episode of Ed is brought to you by Pod Power. With Pod Power, our sponsors are making it possible for us to amplify the voices of Albertans and Alberta podcasters. This episode, the Edmonton Community Foundation is helping us give a Pod Power shout-out to Overdue Finds. It's an Edmonton Public Library podcast. Bryce Crittenden and Carolyn Land host conversations about books, movies, music, pop culture, and other interesting news about Edmonton. It's a great way to learn more about what's happening at EPL and about how you can use your library card to access all of EPL's in-person and online services. To listen and find out more about Overdue Finds, head to epl.ca/podcast. Hey, welcome to Ed, a podcast about the teaching life. This is Conversation 175, and I'm your host, Shane Lawrence. Ed is a proud member of the Alberta Podcast Network, locally grown and community supported. How are you? I'm sounding chipper, but honestly, I'm actually really tired. I've had a day in which, I don't know, it's inexplicably, I just find myself completely emptied out. And maybe this is my way of kind of filling back up again, just spending some time at the mic and reflecting on the week that has been. So I hope your week has been good. I've had an interesting week. I am very much a curiosity-driven person, which is both a blessing and a curse. I'd say the curse side of it is simply that, you know, I tend to be easily distracted because I'm curious about so many other things. But nonetheless, a couple of things that have definitely been grabbing my attention lately, which is just, well, first is drone photography. I have a drone that my wife blessed me with this Christmas, and I've decided that rather than just learning how to fly it, I'm also going to learn how to take better photos. So I've been managing to take some pretty nice photos, and I'm proud of that, and just having a lot of fun with it. And also 3D printing. And I know I mentioned on the show before, but I've had a student that's been working at printing off this rather complex project. We finally finished it the other week. Turned out great. Looks amazing. But my curiosity is not sated, having just learned as much as I have about how to 3D print, how to fix broken 3D printers, which is a whole skill set in itself. And I feel like, I mean, I can sell it to myself as making myself a better teacher, but I know in my heart of hearts that the real driver here is just my own curiosity and the fact that I'm just having so much fun. There's that positive side of me, which is saying, well, that's what makes you a better teacher. And I know it does, but it feels a little unfair perhaps that I'm enjoying myself as much as I am, but what the heck, I'm having a great time doing some really cool projects. Hopefully can share some of those just online. So yeah, I don't know, look for that. And I hope you are finding ways to fulfill your own curiosity and maybe have some fun along the way. And speaking of curiosity, speaking of fun, I have got a great guest for you this week. I am talking with Nick Furman, Ranger Nick, if you want to call him that. And I came across Ranger Nick via a TED Talk he did about the one thing that all great teachers do. And it'll be in the show notes, the link to that. I strongly encourage you to go watch it. It's a fantastic talk. And Nick is just one of those guys where you just immediately feel, you know, even though we're connecting through Zoom, just like we're just hanging out in a porch, sipping some iced tea and enjoying a great day. And I think you'll get that impression from him right away as well. He works with animals in teaching, and he does this at a post-secondary level, but also still goes into schools as well with his owls and snakes and turtles. It's a fantastic conversation. It's a great perspective on teaching and on interacting with students. He's got a real love for what he does. And I'm sure you'll be able to figure that out right away. Here it is. Here's my talk with Nick Furman.
Yeah. How's your day been then?
Man, it's been great, Shane. I tell you what, I want to start by telling you how much I appreciate you reaching out to me about that talk. You know, it is amazing to me the reach of those TED Talks. You know, I have watched them myself before and used them in class periodically, you know, as a professor, but it wasn't until almost 3 years ago that I did that.
Yeah.
That I realized that, man, people watch those things and I hear from folks, and it's really humbling to know that that made a difference and that you had the effort and the passion to reach out to me and say, I'm going to try to get a hold of this guy. That really means a lot. So I really appreciate it, Shane.
Oh,
thanks.
Absolutely. Well, not a problem. I mean, it was a fun TED Talk. I'm like, man, I want to talk to this guy, because it's like, you're this animal guy. You know, that's really cool.
Yeah.
Right on. Yeah, no, I loved I mean, I remember when I was a kid, you know, there was someone who came to my school. I didn't quite have the same sort of, like, you know, come to Jesus kind of moment like you did, but I still remember it though. I mean, just the, you know, the animals, and just, it's so fascinating. There's something very almost like primal about it, you know? I don't know.
Oh yeah. And it is. And the thing I think about somebody like Ranger Bill, the guy that really inspired me to take up this career that I'm in now, is that folks like that are working for a zoo or an aquarium, that go into a school for less than an hour, mm-hmm. you know, like I talked about in that TED Talk, they're there really with the idea that folks aren't there to see them to learn. They're there to have a good time. So if you're really going to teach something, you got to sneak the learning in. It's about edutainment. I always love that phrase. It's mm-hmm. it's about the fun part of using the animals, grabbing the attention of this audience, whether it's kids or adults, and then sneaking in the educational stuff. You know, the what can you do at home to help kind of stuff, which is an art.
Yeah, it is. I mean, is that kind of your overall approach then? You're always just trying to, like, sneak in the learning with your kids or your students?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I teach freshman college students up through graduate students. But when I was working for the Department of Natural Resources in Maryland, where I met Ranger Bill and all that kind of stuff, It was primarily youth. You know, it might have been elementary to middle school age students. And I think what I realized really quick is that these students have been with their teacher all day, and the students have to be in that class, and they're learning maybe some stuff that they're not so excited about.
Yeah.
And I get a chance to change their mind, especially about some animals that have stereotypes. I mean, you think about snakes and you think to yourself, well, what can I do to change someone's mind about this animal? And maybe giving the animal a name, maybe telling a kind of a cute, touching story about that animal and how I got the animal might pull at their emotions and get them. But I find that kind of stuff really helps. And to me, I always realize that I'm only there for about an hour, and then I leave when I do these Ranger Nick talks. And so I've only got an hour to really move that audience from awareness to action, is what I always kind of say. You know, it's like, I want them leaving going, okay, I know what I'm going to do when I get home. I'm not going to litter, or I'm going to tell somebody to not kill a snake. I know what I have to do, you know, and it's tough in an hour. And to form that relationship and to show, you know, like I talked about in that talk, that you care, gosh, that's important. You know, little things that you can do in a genuine way to show that you care about that audience are so important.
So are you still going into schools like with the youngins as well then?
I sure do. I do that stuff quite a bit. We've got some animals here at our home that my wife thankfully lets me have that are all super, super nice, turtles, snakes, stuff like that, that I use in class at the University of Georgia, as well as going into schools, elementary schools, middle school, high schools, and talk to students with them as well. So I'm still doing that. If I wasn't, I would really miss it, because that's where I got started, is thinking about teaching kids using animals. And I just love it. Yeah.
And what, so you've kind of touched on a little bit, but is the main thrust of when you go into these schools, is it about teaching kids about, like, environmental stewardship?
Yeah, it really is. And Shane, one of the things we try to do is talk about locally relevant environmental problems. So when I worked in Maryland, the Chesapeake Bay watershed was a big thing there. You know, Chesapeake Bay, this big estuary that comes up through the state of Maryland, and there's a lot of rivers that feed into that bay. Well, there's all kinds of pollution issues and habitat issues, and there are threatened and endangered species that live along that bay. And so we were always trying to talk about things that locally that kids could do to go and help the animals that we had that I was teaching with. And all of the animals that I had, and I mean snakes, turtles, owls, hawks, falcons, eagles, all these things had a story behind why they were with me. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what was so powerful is being able to see, for example, a red-tailed hawk, which is a bird that's all over North America. I mean, really, really common. But being able to see one 3 or 4 feet away from someone and being able to see one that was missing a wing. I had a red-tailed hawk I used for years that had been hit by a car. Mm-hmm. Very common injury with birds of prey. And its wing had to be amputated. Well, when I would take this bird out and people would see the way this bird looked and even the way he would take, so his right wing was amputated and he only had his left wing. Well, I would always hold the bird in my right hand. So you kind of have to visualize this. So here's this poor hawk trying to balance himself on my hand. And I'm a guy that does not stand still for very long when I'm talking. So here's this poor bird trying to hold on to my hand. I've got a glove on, you know.
Yeah.
And so the way that this hawk would balance itself is it would put its left wing out and kind of around my shoulder, kind of like he had his arm around me, you know?
Yeah.
And it was the neatest. People would just melt. I mean, they were just, oh my gosh, look at this hawk. It's like he's got his arm around you. And they could see this bond that I would have with those animals. And that was absolutely true. I mean, those animals have a personality. They know me. They knew my voice. And it really, it went to show an audience that this animal is an ambassador of an environmental message. And that's really what we were trying to do. And plus, animals just have this ability to grab attention, you know, and it was just such an interesting thing. Yeah.
Well, what is that? What is that sort of attention grabbing property or characteristic that animals have? Because I mean, you're right. And how would you explain that to someone? I mean, why does that work?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what. So, and I teach a class called Teaching with Animals, which has been a dream of mine to do. And this is the kind of stuff that I study, Shane, exactly what you just asked me. So the thing that I will tell you is it's so important in terms of grabbing somebody's attention to keep that animal a surprise before that animal makes an appearance in front of an audience. So a lot of times I'll see a zoo educator or a person at an aquarium or nature center come into a school or an auditorium, and they bring in these containers, you know, these enclosures that they have the animals in, and you can see exactly what's in that enclosure. Well, you know, the cat's out of the bag, so to say. Everybody knows what you got now, and there's no surprise. There's no buildup. There's no, you know, that edutainment value. So I think keeping that animal a surprise before it comes out is really, really important. And then I think once it comes out, keeping the attention of the audience by moving yourself and keeping that animal moving so that there is that draw. People are drawn to something that's moving and new. Uh-huh. And I think that's important. And I will say this, after a certain amount of time, and in fact, we kind of have it narrowed down to about 7 minutes, believe it or not. So after about 7 minutes of having that animal out and talking about it, the audience is beginning to get bored. So if I really want them to learn something, I'm going to put that animal back and really get down to business in terms of talking about facts or things that they can do. Because after 7 minutes, they're just staring at the animal. They're not listening to me. They're, you know, I mean, they're wondering, oh, is it going to poop on me or him or what? I mean, they're just, their mind is wandering now.
Yeah.
And so after about 7 minutes, I get it out of there.
Huh. And oh gosh, I lost it. I had a thing I want to ask you, and it totally just lit on my mind.
No, it's okay.
It happens way too often.
I'll tell you this related to that attention thing. Here's a cool thing.
Yeah.
So we have studied in a series of studies, we have studied the power of not only using animals that have visible injuries. So like that red-tailed hawk that was missing a wing, but we've studied animals that have a name, that have been given a name, in terms of what people learn from that animal. And as you might imagine, naming an animal really helps make it almost a character in the story that I'm teaching the audience about. And so we found that naming animals is really powerful, and it's really a good thing. Despite sometimes I work with zoos and stuff that, and when I worked in Maryland, we were this way too. Mm-hmm. Well, we don't name anything because it makes it seem like it's a pet. And I understand that.
Yeah.
But it definitely helps from a learning standpoint to name that animal in terms of grabbing attention and getting people to learn stuff. Yeah.
So, okay. So it is from research standpoint, it helps people understand, or not understand, but connect better to what you're presenting.
Exactly.
But I mean, what about when you do have people who are coming at you and saying, well, you're humanizing these animals, you're just using them like an object and they're living beings. Like, how do you approach that side of it?
Yeah. Well, you know what? I will say this, Shane, knock on wood. I have, in the years I've been doing this stuff, and I've been teaching with animals for probably, and I mean, raptors, reptiles, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I've been doing this stuff for probably 25 years, let's say. And I can only count on one hand, maybe three times, has anybody ever said, why do you have this animal? What's the purpose of having that mm-hmm. in education? Why did you remove this from the wild, for example? And I always keep with me the permits that I have to have the animals that I do. And these are educational permits. So they're not used for entertainment, you know, like a circus might. These are only used for teaching. Mm-hmm. And I think in the three times, I guess I've been asked that question, I will give someone a copy of my permit and just say, well, you know, actually I have a permit to have these and they're ambassadors of a message. And I think what's happened is that somebody sees the personality I have and how genuine I am about using that animal mm-hmm. as an ambassador. And I think that they dismiss it from there. They go, oh, okay. I just wanted to make sure you weren't mistreating this animal or you know, that kind of things, you know? Right. So, yeah.
So, okay. So what's the difference between like, you know, say I've got, you know, a bird that whacks my window, the front of my house, you know, and I go out and scoop it up and say, okay, you're an educational animal now. I mean, what do I need right. to do to actually make that, you know, legal?
Well, I tell you, so any bird like that, they're all protected, at least in the United States, they're protected mm-hmm. by a Migratory Bird Act. So the yeah. Fish and Wildlife Service in the U.S. protects those things. And so anytime an animal is injured and can't be released,
right.
usually that animal is euthanized if there's no way to make it better.
Right.
Except if it's a bigger, like a bird of prey or something that's a little bit stronger and can handle an operation and anesthesia and all that, mm-hmm. then there's a chance that they would say, well, like with that red-tailed hawk, you know, this thing is still okay other than the wing missing. If we can find an individual that would take it, a professional, and yeah. use it in education, they'll do that. And that's,
right.
gosh, when I worked in Maryland, we had about 100 birds. And I would say 75% of them had been hit by cars. That was the biggest wow. issue, you know, as the reason we get them. And then to be able to use them in education is just such a, to me, it's such a wonderful thing versus them being put down, you know? Yeah. So it was such a powerful thing. And I'll say this too about the animals. A lot of people will ask me, they'll say, well, the first thing they'll say is, have you ever thought about being a preacher? I've heard that a bunch, you know.
I can see that. Yeah.
About being, you know, and actually I have my great grandmother. And I think I mentioned this in the TED talk. She used to call me her little preacher boy yeah. back when I was like 5 years old. Cause I've always loved being in front of people and I just love to talk, you know? Mm-hmm. So people will ask me, they'll say, do you ever get nervous before you talk in front of a group or anything? And I say, well, yeah. I said, but here's the thing. When I have something with me, when I have an animal with me or something in my hand, mm-hmm. I feel like the attention is not on me as much as it is the animal. And that really helps to calm my nerves down if I am nervous. And
right.
I tell you, Shane, I've found this with my students too. You know, the students that are really, really scared to stand up in front of the class and give a presentation. Mm-hmm. If I give them a turtle, you know, let's say a box turtle or like a gopher tortoise, like you saw in the
yeah.
TED talk.
Yeah.
I give them something like that to hold mm-hmm. and I teach them how to hold it and how to use it as an ambassador. It's amazing how much less nervous they are. I mean, yeah. they're a much better speaker.
Yeah. No, you know, it's funny. I teach drama, junior high drama.
Oh, okay.
And a smattering of other things, but it's only started doing it this year and it was actually before your TED talk, but you know, if I have nervous students, I kind of do something similar. You know, if someone has to perform something solo, they can have, if they're really nervous, I'll say, okay, you can take someone up with you and they can just kind of stand off on the side. You know,
oh,
and
yeah.
I literally say, you can take your support animal on stage. And
yeah.
And it has the very similar effect, though, that the nervous, they get way less nervous just having a friend within like 3 feet, you know?
Isn't that something? And, yeah. and I think you doing that, that's such a wonderful thing. And then once that student gets through that experience and they realize, all right, I didn't die, I'm still okay, I can do this again. And maybe after a few more times, then their friend doesn't need to be there. And yeah. they can just do this themselves. You know, that's an incredible thing. And I'm so glad that you're doing that kind of stuff because we call them career ready skills, life skills, soft mm-hmm. skills. Sometimes people call those things.
Yeah.
I think those kind of skills just aren't being emphasized enough in all, you know, K through 12, even into college. We're just not spending enough time on those kinds of communication, problem solving, teamwork, critical thinking, those things. So important.
So then is part of your approach with animals, is it also to help prospective educators like learn to sort of overcome stage fright or nervousness?
Yeah, it definitely is. So that teaching with animals class, I'd say probably 75% of the folks in there want to be environmental educators. So they want to work in a zoo or aquarium or nature center or be an environmental science teacher, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But then the other, you know, 25-30% are taking it as a public speaking class because they've heard that it's like public, and it is, it's like public speaking, but without the podium, without the note cards. I just believe in a student developing almost like a lesson plan of what they would do in their presentation, but not memorizing it. I always tell the students, don't script this thing out, because I want you to have some bigger, broader issues you want to hit in your mind, but keep it conversational. I find that if the students are memorizing line for line, mm-hmm. and then if they forget two or three words of that one line, well, the train has fallen off the tracks. I mean, it's just, it's awful. I find if you're conversational, and you're relaxed up there and just talking to the audience. I always say there's a difference between teaching and presenting. And I really like to encourage students to teach instead of present. You know, I find that so important.
Yeah.
I'll tell you this crazy story. And this is how I am, Shane. It's how I am in class. I've got all these stories and students are. So I know that when I'm teaching with animals, and I'm working with somebody that I know is scared to death of public speaking. And I've had students before mm-hmm. that, I mean, are physically sick before they have to get up in front of a class, let's say of even, you know, 15 or 20, and give up a teaching demonstration. And they're just scared of that. Mm-hmm. But I've found that when that student is up there and something unexpected happens, let's say with that animal, and I'll just tell you this story. This has happened so many times. The student will be holding a turtle, like a box turtle, and turtles do this all the time. But the turtle pees. And this turtle just pees right there. It is amazing how from that moment forward, this unexpected thing that happens to this student that's scared to death up there, they laugh about it a little bit. The audience laughs a little bit. Okay. From that moment forward, they are such a better teacher. They're such a better speaker. And I'm not saying that, well, send them up there with some animal and hope it goes to
really,
the
really give that turtle a lot of water before it goes on.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. But I have seen it so many times. And I and my students will all be videotaped when they're teaching, you know. And you talk about an awkward but very beneficial thing is to watch yourself on video, you know.
Yeah.
And the students will watch it and they'll go, yeah, you know, one of my turtles' name is Scooter. They'll say, well, when Scooter peed, from that moment forward, I was so much better. Like, I became relaxed. I just had fun with this. I rolled with it. I said, yeah, something unexpected happened. You dealt with it just fine. You're a human being. Mm-hmm. You're going to make mistakes. And it almost builds rapport with the audience when that happens. And so I just want students to see that when you're doing stuff at work and life, things are going to happen and you just have to persevere and roll with it and be a normal human being about it and you'll be fine.
Yes. Yeah. I completely agree. I wish I'd had that lesson earlier on in my career as a teacher, because it was always something goes wrong. You're like, oh, don't look at that, kids. And, you try and cover it up. Well, you're also trying to do this other thing, and then you're just spinning plates and they're all falling. And that's brilliant. I mean, I wonder, have you looked at, obviously animals is your thing. And it seems like it's kind of almost like a talisman for students and for audiences. Is there anything else that's effective? Like, I mean, I can't get my hands, say, on a turtle tomorrow to, you know, wow my drama kids. Are there other ways to kind of approach this same kind of idea, but not with living creatures?
Oh, absolutely. I'll say this. Two things. One, I think it doesn't have to be alive. Mm-hmm. So I have given a student, let's say they're doing a demonstration, they're teaching about the difference between deciduous trees, oak trees, maple trees, and coniferous trees, you know, pine trees, fir trees, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And let's just say they've got some examples of some deciduous tree leaves in their hand and acorns and stuff. mm-hmm. and they've got some coniferous needles and pine cones and stuff in their hand, and they're looking at these, showing these to the audience. Having that object in their hands mm-hmm. is taking that attention off of them. Now, it's not a moving thing, of course, but it's taking the attention off of them and giving them something, the audience, something to focus on. So anything that takes the attention literally off of their face mm-hmm. and this scared look and the silence that could be in the room when they forget what they're about to say, which they're scared to death of, is that silence. I think anything like that can benefit. The other thing I'll say is that for my students that are especially nervous, sometimes I'll tell them, and I did this in that TED talk, of course it's all planned, but yeah. when that gopher tortoise, I found that gopher tortoise, you know, quote unquote, found this thing on stage. I'll tell my students, when you're up there talking, when you're teaching us, put something somewhere in the room that you just happen to notice and go over there and get it and bring it up to the front, whatever it is, whatever object it is, it gets you physically from the front of the room into the class, into the audience, getting this thing. You walk a little bit. It makes you a little bit less nervous. You're not directly in front. And you bring it up there, and it's something different. It's a surprise. It's something that almost like it's different from the mold of the traditional stand behind a podium and give a 10-minute speech. Mm-hmm. I think that personality, especially in my discipline of environmental education, science education, that kind of thing, that is so welcomed. But I also think that doing something like that in a number of different disciplines, you know, it could even be more of a formalized, even in a business setting, I can see adding that kind of personality to a presentation, to a demonstration, really making it more memorable. And really, I always say giving some personality to what you're saying. I just find that people will remember that stuff a lot more than they will a presentation without personality, without enthusiasm. I just think, and enthusiasm for each person is different than it is for me.
Yeah.
You know, for me, I run all over the place. I can't help it. I get excited about teaching. But as long as someone has their level of passion, their level of enthusiasm, that audience will see that. And it's contagious. And mm-hmm. it's just a wonderful thing. I think in all things in life, you know, not to get on my soapbox, but I think that is a real secret. You know, like if somebody said, Nick, what is the secret to life? I'd say, look, it's enthusiasm. It is passion. No matter what you're doing, if you're excited about it, people are going to want to be around you, and you're going to be remembered, and you're going to be successful. I really believe that.
Well, you definitely seem very enthusiastic about, you know, what you do. I mean, almost,
oh, yeah.
you know, in love with what you do. I mean, it seems like this is real. Yeah. I mean,
oh, I love it. Well, you absolutely do.
Yeah. Well, you do a lot of different things though, too, because I mean, you're mentoring, you know, PhD students. You're also going into schools. You are, you know, teaching, you're doing research. I mean, I'm scared you're just going to tell me that you love all of it, and I'm going to be really jealous. But I mean, what's the one thing? If you had to whittle your job down to like one thing, what would that one thing be that sort of drives you the most?
All right, students. Number one is student interaction. It does not matter if it's a PhD student wrapping up, a freshman just starting at the University of Georgia, a fourth grader that we go to visit with in a school with the animals, working with the individuals with special needs that I work a lot with here in Georgia. I think it's just people. It's working with people, especially students, because there's a certain hunger in them for knowledge, and I can see their growth. I can see them get excited about something. I can even, particularly lately, notice when things aren't right, you know, with all the COVID stuff going on. And there's some real issues with student loneliness and depression. And I can notice when something's not quite right with a particular student. And I can very simply, after class, say to them, hey, you doing okay? Everything doing all right? And then all of a sudden, sometimes they'll open up to me and tell me things that are going on. And I just think to myself, you know, this job that I have, if they took everything else away, they took the research away, the grants away, all that stuff, I would not miss that stuff. I mean, I enjoy it, but I wouldn't miss it. If you took students away from my job, I would quit. I would not do this. I just, students are the absolute, I can't imagine my life without it, because it's really amazing. And that's why in that TED talk, I think about myself as a teacher. But I think everybody is a teacher. you know, in a way. Everybody's working with folks and mm-hmm. can make a difference by just caring, building a connection. But students are the best part. Oh, man, it's just when I get in the classroom and teach, even if it's online, completely online, I just, you know, I love that. Even I do this television thing down here. It's on RFD TV nationally in the U.S. And we go every month. There's a segment called Ranger Nick.
Okay.
And I go out, and it's just me, and I go out and talk about ag and natural resource related stuff. It's part of a show called the Georgia Farm Monitor.
Okay.
It's produced by the Farm Bureau here in Georgia, and it airs nationally. And I go out every month into the woods and or onto a farm or something and show some different thing that somebody may not have thought of before.
Right.
And even that, I feel like I'm connecting. Mm-hmm. Any kind of teaching on a camera in front of an audience, I love that. I will be that 90-year-old professor still showing up to work and teaching because I cannot imagine not doing it.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. It's cool.
Are there any like teachers in your past that have kind of inspired you on this path?
I aside from Ranger Bill, I had an environmental science. Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I had an environmental science teacher in high school that was really, really good. I use that word genuine a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, not everybody is going to knock it out of the park every day when they go into class to teach their lesson. And I'm the same way. I mean, it's just everybody's human. And this guy was so genuine. He was so caring. He was so, you could just tell this guy loved what he was doing and he was really in it for us, you know, as a high school student. And I just remember interacting with him after class, doing things in environmental science with him. Mr. Dunkerton was his name. Mm-hmm. He passed away a couple of years ago, but I remember just that relationship we had. And then I remember some professors I had in college that just, I mean, made a difference. Just you could look at them and tell, gosh, this person loves what they're doing. And mm-hmm. they just, and that is so contagious. And I think that stands out more today because in universities like the University of Georgia, these big universities, it is very much pushed that research is important. And of course it is. And I do a lot of that and it's okay. But I think sometimes great teachers stand out even more today because you have other teachers that are so into their research, and that's okay, mm-hmm. that they view coming into class as kind of like this is just a responsibility. I have to be here. And it's just, they're not into it. So the people that are really loving it, we stand out even more, you know, and it's just, and I've had a couple of those over the years but I'll say this, I think I have learned more about great teaching, not from the people that did a phenomenal job, but probably from the people that didn't do a great job. You know, I looked at them and thought, I'm not going to do that one day. You know, just, I knew the difference that behavior they did made that really shut the class down or made us feel stupid or whatever. And I realized, you know, that those little things really make a difference in a negative way. And that's what I try to tell new teachers and new faculty that are just starting out, you know, like at University of Georgia. I tell them, I say, you know, you just be yourself and realize that the students are always watching. You know, they can tell when you're not having a good day, but they can tell when you care. And if you care about them, you're going to be successful. And it doesn't necessarily mean you got to make the stuff easy. Because I always say students usually don't want it to be a walk in the park. They want to be challenged. You know, mm-hmm. they want to be pushed and driven and get their money's worth, you know, out of that class or whatever. So I tell them, don't think that being super easy is going to get you these great teacher evaluation scores. You know, that kind of stuff. I said, you know, I have this phrase, I like to be compassionately demanding. And that's like just a neat little, you know, it's like push them, show that you care about them, you know, but push them and tell them if what you're asking them to do is challenging. If you're purposefully being vague about the instruction on an assignment, tell them that. Tell them, look, I know this is not very clear and I did that on purpose. I want to see what you can do with this. Yeah. I want to see what your creativity is like. And it's just cool to see that, you know, and then they feel like, okay, you know, Dr. Furman told us that he purposefully did this way. So let's just do the best we can and relax about it and see what happens. And it's good.
That's funny. I mean, I agree with pretty much everything you said. I do. I do. Just the idea of, you know, challenging your kids. But I like how we're combining. I mean, you can be hard because you're a horrible teacher and you just don't like, you know, your students or what you're doing, but you can be, but I mean, when you couple it together with like that passion for what you do and you're just like, I'm on this amazing ride. It's going to be hard, but you got to come with me. It's going to be fun. Right? Like that's the kind of ride I want to get on. And it actually brings to mind one of my English profs in university. I mean, I worked my butt off for that guy, like hard, but because he was such a passionate, he was so passionate about what he was doing. And he came and he shared it with us and he was nothing like you at all. I mean, if we're talking about being yourself, I mean, he was British and very reserved and just talking about romantic poetry. Yeah. And I mean, I ate it up and it was fantastic. And I mean, you know, that was, So, I love that you're combining those two things. Just like, let's get in there. Let's be passionate, but let's challenge our students to go on this crazy ride. That's going to be hard.
Yeah, and especially, you know, when we talk, I teach students about teaching and I want to get them outside of their comfort zone a little bit because they're going to be up in front of this class of students and they need to know how to think on their feet, you know, and they need to know how to gracefully say, well, this didn't exactly go like I thought it would. And we're going to pick this up again tomorrow and try it again. I mean, just being upfront with folks and saying, just being honest with them. I think that is that's the best thing that we can do, you know,
absolutely.
Being yourself. Yeah.
Well, Nick, thank you so much for sharing your passion with me. This has been a fantastic conversation.
Oh man, Shane, I so appreciate you reaching out. It means the world to me that you, first of all, that you watched that talk and thank you so much for doing it. And just asked me to do this. I just love, and like I say, I love talking about teaching. Mm-hmm. And I love talking with somebody that loves teaching too. So I'm so thrilled at what you're doing. And thank you for doing the job that you're doing. We so appreciate it.
Well, thank you. And back at you, Nick. I mean, thank you.
Actually,
thanks. Now at the end of our conversation, what do you prefer? Ranger Nick, Dr. Nick, Nick?
Oh, thanks for asking. Most of the students call me Ranger Nick. But you know what? It's my name is Nick, you know, so if people call me Nick, but a lot of them will say, well, you know, we're here in the South, you know, wink, wink. So they're saying, my parents would kill me if I called you by your first names. I said, well, you call me Ranger Nick instead of Dr. Furman. I have some colleagues that really love the doctor thing. And I say, you know, it's true, but it's overrated. I don't need that. My name's Nick. And so just whatever. So yeah, however you want. Ranger Nick is cool. A lot of people, you know, from the TV thing and stuff, they'll see me and they know me as Ranger Nick. So, and that's been since I was a kid. So I'll always answer to that.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, if people do want to reach out to you, how can they do that? If they want to know more about what you do?
Absolutely. Well, they can on Facebook, you search Ranger Nick on Facebook and I'm out there and I have a website that a colleague of mine built for me not too long ago. It's nickfurman.org.
Okay.
And my last name is Furman with that H in there. So Nickfurman .org. And that way, and then, and you can go on to Google and search me and my email and things will come up there at the University of Georgia and reach out to me that way.
Excellent.
You know, I'll tell you, Shane, that TED Talk, it's probably at least once a week.
Yeah.
I will hear from someone. They'll look me up and find my email. Look me up and shoot me a note. So I would love to hear from folks if they've been moved by this or sometimes people ask me, hey, would you come and talk to my group about teaching or inspiring change? And I do that stuff a lot. So any way they want to get me, my email is just simply my last name, Furman at UGA for University of Georgia .edu. So Furman at UGA.edu. That'll get me. And I respond right away on stuff and keep in touch. I'm glad you did. Is that how you found me, Shane? You just looked me up?
Yeah. I mean, sorry, TED Talk. And so then I figured, okay, where does he teach? And then I kind of went there and found your page on the university website. So
And that stuff is that's so appreciated. I'd love to hear from some folks, you know.
Excellent. Well, I hope you do.
That's cool. Well, thanks, man.
Well, thank you, Nick. It's been great.
It's been great. Thank you so much. And I hope to keep in touch with you.
Absolutely, for sure. All right, I'll talk to you later.
Thanks,
take care.
Shane. All right, bye.
All right,
bye.
Thanks again, Nick, for coming on the show. What a great conversation. Just felt warm. I hope you kind of picked that up as you're listening. Nick is just such a genuinely warm person. And when he says reach out, I think he means it. So do get in touch with him. Watch his TED Talk. Let him know what you thought. course, got another sponsor for this episode, and this time out, it is Taproot Edmonton. And they publish curiosity-driven stories, topical newsletters, and locally-focused podcasts, all in the service of informing Edmontonians about their community. And if you want to stay informed, you can check out The Pulse. It's Taproot's new daily news briefing. The Pulse tells you what you need to know about Edmonton every weekday morning. You'll get short, informative updates about what's happening at City Hall, plus coverage of business, tech, food, the arts, and more. You'll also get a little bit of whimsy from features such as A Moment in History, Chart of the Week, and the Friday Podcast Pick. And it's free. You can sign up today at taprootedmonton.ca/pulse. That's taprootedmonton.ca/pulse. And as always, if you want to get in touch with me, you can find all things Ed at theedpodcast.com, or you can hit me up on Twitter at theedpodcast. To catch all the latest episodes, be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever your favorite podcatcher is. Just search up Ed Conversations. You can also listen to Ed and lots of other great edu-focused shows at Voice Ed Radio. Just go to voiced.ca. So, on behalf of myself and Ranger Nick, thank you so much for listening, and we'll catch you next time. Bye.